Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ubi Est Mia, a show about Chicago by former Chicagoans. My name is Brandon Weatherby. This episode is with Miss Chavant and Yuma Ray, an excellent band currently based in Washington, D.C., kind of mostly a touring band, and they used to live in Chicago before they were a band. So this is a very fun episode. It's really great if you're interested in touring life, because what these two people do and their entire band is out of the ordinary, and I think it's very interesting, and I hope that you're interested in hearing it as well. Before we begin, I want to let you know about one show that we're going to be doing in Chicago, Illinois on May 26th. The other show that I host, You, Me, Them, Everybody Live, returns to the Hungry Brain, 2319 West Belmont in Chicago, Illinois on Thursday, May 26th. It's our first show at the Hungry Brain in 18 months. The Hungry Brain closed, now it's back open, and we're extremely excited to be back there. Go to youmethemeverybody.com for more information about that one. Here's our interview, recorded backstage at the Kingman Island Bluegrass and Folk Festival with Miss Chavant and Yuma Ray. Yeah, we are in the woods.
Yeah.
Can you hear the tweeting and all the, you know?
You can't hear the tweeting.
Well, not tweeting as in the sounds birds make, not like what people do on their smartphones.
Do you not approve of Twitter?
But I'm currently on Twitter detox, actually. I still have my account, but I've been off for a couple of months. I'm a happier person when I'm not on Twitter.
Who am I speaking with?
I'm Miss Chavant.
And I'm Victor Hugo. I'm Yuma Ray.
If you're going to be Victor Hugo, I'm going to be Balzac.
Okay.
No.
I'm Yuma Ray. You're Miss Chavant.
I'm Miss Chavant.
Okay, and we are both at, all three of us are at the Kingman Island Bluegrass and Folk Festival.
We are.
Which is a mouthful and much too long of a name for a festival.
But it's very accurate.
That's why they booked us, because Miss Chavant
exactly.
And Yuma Ray is too long of a name. So, you know, there you go.
It is absolutely not accurate. You guys are a fantastic band, and I would not describe you as bluegrass or folk.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I guess that part's the... I was thinking more of the location. The location is accurate.
We are technically on Kingman Island in Washington, D.C. That is correct. And I didn't know where you guys were from. And you've sort of been on my radar for a very long time because we were in Chicago at the same time.
Oh, wow.
But I never connected the dots until my friend introduced us together before we introduced you on stage. So when were you in Chicago?
I lived there for 7 years, and the final year was like the very, very tail end of 2010, right before there was a huge, or the right very beginning of 2011.
Yeah, no,
there was a huge blizzard.
We left the city on the heels of a gigantic blizzard that actually it was the one that froze everybody in their tracks on Lakeshore Drive. Now I moved there in 2005. Miss Chavant was there in 2003. We both left at the end of 2010, and that was the precursor to our year on the road, living in the back of our Honda Element, all of our music equipment, driving around the country. I think at that point that year we did something like 125 gigs in 2011.
Yeah.
Just playing as a duo. And since then we've been in and out of the area because our drummer Ben Tufts lives here.
The area being Washington D.C.
Yes, of course. Sorry.
We don't live on Kingman Island.
Now, when you say living out of your car, you literally mean lived out of your car.
Yes. Now we've upgraded to a Sprinter van, but we live in our Sprinter van. And actually, especially now, we are usually residents of California when we're not on tour these days. We live in Paso Robles, which is a nice wine town on the Central Coast. And we've decided that we wanted to come play a lot more as a band, and Ben's here to play drums with us. So we're actually, our huge, great, well thought out plan is that we're in the D.C. area for probably the rest of the year. And for now, what we're doing is living in our van.
How often do you get a good night's sleep?
Oh, man, our beds in there are really comfortable. Yeah.
Now, are you saying this with your eyes rolling, or are you being sincere?
No, I'm very serious. Usually, if we don't get a good night's sleep, it's just because, you know, we're at a gig until 3 or 4 in the morning, which happens pretty frequently. But there are times when we're on the road, and we feel so bad sometimes because, you know, when you play a show and you meet other musicians, and a lot of times they're like, oh, you know, we live here in town. Why don't you guys come back and stay at our place? You can sleep on our couch. And I feel really bad turning them down because I'm like, actually, man, the beds that we have built in our van are way more comfortable. And more importantly, they feel like home. And so it's familiar and comfortable to us. So to everyone out there who has or will offer us a place to stay, we love you. Please don't take it personally. Probably going to sleep in our van.
But we might use your bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have indoor plumbing in the van.
How often do you shower?
Well, The longest that we ever went without a shower, and this was horrible because we spent the night in the Badlands in South Dakota, and then the next day we had a live video performance at White Wall Sessions, which is a really amazing, amazing show that they have in South Dakota. And when we got there, we realized that we hadn't showered in like 6 days. I had to wear a hat.
No, it was more than that.
Was it more than that?
It was more like a week, a week and a half or so at that point.
Oh,
and
that's terrible.
It was a week and a half of a lot of camping and really, really like hot, nasty weather.
However, we now have Planet Fitness gym memberships because they're everywhere. And I mean, I like going to the gym and I like working out, and it's totally a way to stay sane on the road. But this morning I went to the gym and all I did was shower.
Yeah.
Do you also have a gym membership?
Oh, yeah.
Do you work out?
Occasionally.
What do you do?
You know, I was a bicycle messenger when I lived in D.C. And so I tend towards, like, you know, more like cardio, I guess. I can't really get down with like lifting weights too much. I guess I've always seen myself as, you know, the wiry, svelte individual that I am. But no, most of the time what I do is just in an effort to, you know, get some physical activity that I would normally get were I not driving a van 6-7 hours a day sometimes.
How many miles is on your van?
It's close to 200,000, because actually
we're at 170,000 right now.
When you bought it, what was it at?
Like 45.
So you put on about 150,000 miles in.
Yeah, and then we were in the Honda Element, the first year and a half, pretty much, and that just rolled over 200.
Okay. Number one, let's go back a little bit. I just want to ask why, but that's never ending. How did you two meet? Let's start with that.
Okay. We met here in D.C. at a hip-hop show.
Yep.
At a club that doesn't exist anymore, and it was 1999. We had friends in common. And who was playing?
Oh, well, see, this used to be this place over on, it was like 20th and Pennsylvania, and they would get, like, randomly really big name hip-hop acts, like Smith & Wesson, the Coco Brothers, played a show, and I think you and I was supposed to go to a warehouse party in Baltimore. It ended up getting so overly publicized that like we couldn't get in. So me and Harry and Artemis came down and basically...
Sorry, stop. You know a person named Artemis?
Ardamus.
Okay.
Yes, his name is Artemis. He's from Memphis, Tennessee, and he's a really talented rapper actually. But my friend Harry Dixon, who actually goes by Harry Hotter, his local DJ, and yes, his parents gave him that name, and he loves them every day for it. We were going to this warehouse party in Baltimore. Instead, we ended up going to this hip-hop show because we couldn't get into the one in Baltimore. And at that show, there was this sort of like all of our friends kind of crowded around. And we're like, hey, this is... And they introduced us. Like, how do you two not know each other already?
Well, and I was with our friend Errol. And later on when we got together, he was just like, I knew it. I introduced you.
Actually, I think what he said was, you're welcome.
So, that was in 1999.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you weren't in Chicago at the same time. You got there in 2003. Yeah.
Yes, I got there in 2003, and I knew later that Chris had moved there. I was married, and then several years later, I was going through a divorce, and I got a MySpace. This is how long ago.
To tell you what year it was, this is close to the end of 2008. I had a band that I was playing in Chicago where I was desperately trying to get people to come out. So it was a really crappy night.
What was the name of your band?
Oh, they were called The Streeters. And it was
Subterranean.
Yeah, there's a venue in Chicago called Subterranean, and we got a show there on a Sunday night, and it was a Sunday night in December. It was snowy, horrible, horrible evening. But you want to do really well with your first gig at a show because you want to be able to show them that you can bring people out, so maybe you'll get asked back. And so I'm desperately emailing, calling, sending MySpace invites to everybody that I know. And about 10 people showed up, which was more than the other bands brought out. And
were you playing the upstairs or the downstairs?
In Subterranean?
Yes.
Oh, I was upstairs. Yeah.
So that's a room that holds full, 400 people maybe?
Well, it's hard to tell because it has those balconies.
Exactly,
those balconies that go up.
I think there's 100 up there and maybe 300 on the floor, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There were not that many people that night.
10 people
definitely
does
not
no, feel I, like a lot.
I think
10
I,
people downstairs does not feel like a lot.
I think I brought out 10 or 15 people and the other bands brought out a few.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I at the time I was working next door at Estelle's. Not that night. I was not working that night, but so me and my band members went over, we had a drink at Estelle's, and then we came back into Subterranean and you were paying
I was just walking in and
you were
I saw
the cover.
Chris walk in.
you were painting the cover, and I was like, oh, hey, it's good to see you. Where's your husband? And yeah, we're separated. I was like, oh, that's terrible, I think.
It wasn't terrible. It was a good thing.
No divorce ends. It's a Louis C.K. bit, but no divorce ever ends like it's, they're supposed to happen. That's why they're divorces.
Yeah,
so it's fine. Anyways, so you're in this band that 10 people draw. Fine, not respectable, but you're trying. It's, hey, dude, I've been in way worse situations than
crying
in bands in Chicago. It's very difficult to pull. You didn't have it. This band has it. You guys got together as friends / acquaintances, whatever, in 2008. When did the music start together?
A couple of weeks later, actually.
Okay.
Well, she had a bunch of songs that the way that this started is she was playing in a band as well, and we had we each had a few songs. We were like, I don't think either of these songs that we've got really fits with the bands we're currently playing with. So we started working on stuff together, and it rapidly became apparent. I mean, nothing to our former bandmates, you know, that we loved playing with those folks, but it became apparent that these
songs...
Let me
be devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
They don't care. It's fine. If they were offended at all, they would not be listening to this, number one. Number two, you exist without them.
Right.
Those bands broke up for a reason.
Well, we felt that doing this music as we did was going to be the way that the two of us could get on the road and play as much as we could. But, you know, doing this is like, it's, you know, it's you got to sacrifice being comfortable. And I mean, we've had a lot of help from friends and family along the way. But even on our best day, we're still driving a lot of hours, sleeping in a van, unloading and unloading heavy equipment, working on a really irregular schedule. And I mean, we love it, but it's not for everybody. And so this is we both decided, hey, we could do this and make this sacrifice together. And yeah,
clearly this is your job. Clearly.
Yeah, it's our job.
Now, when you were in Chicago, you were working at Estelle's.
I was.
Which is a 4 a.m. bar.
Yeah, I started off as a barback, and I ended up bartending and managing there. And I was pretty much married to that job. It was a very demanding employer. And I was there 5, 6, sometimes 7 nights a week.
Estelle's has two things going for it. Number one, amazing nightly specials where you can get like $2 Guinness. I don't know if that's still the
case. Oh, no, they still do the $2 Tuesdays.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably there at the same time as you. And number two, they're a 4 a.m. bar. / 5 a.m. bar on Saturday nights at Six Corners.
Yeah.
I've seen fights. Multiple fights. I've seen blood in the street, literally.
Yeah.
From the inside of Estelle's.
I cleaned that up once.
Now, you still drink alcohol. You're currently drinking an Atlas Rowdy. That's not a plug.
It's a
truth.
It's a good one.
Now, you still drink alcohol. That didn't turn you off from that culture.
No. Here's the funny story. Before working at Estelle's, I actually worked right down the street at a bicycle shop that is no longer there, called Rapid Transit. On North Avenue, they closed just recently, just a few months ago.
I used to work at Quimby's Caddy,
right
like
next
right
door.
The street.
Yeah, and so I worked at Rapid Transit for about 3 years. I don't feel bad admitting this in public because the establishment is no longer there. But I drank more working there than I ever did working at a 4 a.m. bar.
True, but I'm assuming you didn't see as many fights. I'm assuming you didn't see some people that maybe shouldn't have gone home with some other people. I'm sure you've seen less bad decisions at the bicycle store.
My favorite thing at Estelle's was that there's a huge mirror behind the bar.
There is.
So I would go sit at the bar while he was working, like, just hang out for a little while before I went home. And I would watch in the mirror, like, when it got late. And I couldn't hear people's conversations, but I could see their gestures would become exaggerated in exactly the same way as someone in a job interview. And that was so much fun to watch because it was people who were trying to convince other people to go home with them.
They were auditioning for sex, and it was a really animated audition.
That's so cool. That's so fun.
And so I would, like, think about what I thought they were saying, and then sometimes in my mind I would replace it as if they were actually in a job interview.
Have you written that song yet?
No, but that's a good idea.
I'm really smart. What were you doing in Chicago before you decided to live/work out of a van? By the way, you shouldn't be doing this. I'm hoity-toity. I think it's ballsy as hell, and if you found a partner that's willing to do it with you, more power to you. Just because it's not for me doesn't mean it's amazing for you guys. I have to stop using literally. Here's my issue with literally. I'm keeping this in the show. Most people use it incorrectly, so now I'm trying to use it only when it's apt.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm using it too often, and it's just reminding me how often people use it incorrectly.
Yeah, you're using the correct... It is the correct usage of the word. It's just you found because you feel like you need to, like, put more correct usages of the word out there that your own personal usage of it is, like, going way up.
It's such a stupid cycle.
I've read articles arguing that you can use the word literally in a figurative sort of sense, which to me sounds more like if, like, you ran into your doppelganger and, like, the world exploded.
I understand that analogy. I don't agree because the world won't explode, number one. Number two, that's what it's trending towards. I'm sure in the next 5 years, Merriam-Webster's will have a like third definition of literally meaning figuratively. Anyways, what were you doing in Chicago?
I was playing in a band called In Miniature, and
I'm 90% sure you've played one of my shows.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe. It's
Listen,
possible.
You've only probably played 1,000 shows since then.
It was a long time ago.
Mathematically possible, but you played 1,000 shows.
400 or 500, but you know.
Yeah.
Okay. And besides it, how were you paying rent?
I was the program director at an organization called Rock for Kids,
which is so cool.
Which is now called Foundations of Music.
Why did they change it?
They changed it because the music focus was tending away from rock classes, and so the name was kind of confusing for people.
But but Rock for Kids, and this is about you, not that.
No, that's okay.
It just seems like Rock for Kids is such an easy thing to remember. It's all single syllables. It's not foundation in the foundation means like you're going to build something.
And right.
And I understand that. I understand that that's probably a better word to use for what you're doing with the children, but it's not catchy.
You also have to consider that when you're in the nonprofit world and you're trying to acquire funding through grants.
That's foundation what it is.
Looks better than
yes.
Okay. Well, because the audience is regular people on the street, and it's also a lot of where you're getting your money is from, like, big foundations.
Now, he mentioned grants, and you mentioned grants earlier when we were not recording. What did you do with grants?
I was a grant writer and am still a grant writer and a consultant, but I also was the program director there, and I developed their in-school music program.
Now, it seems like a grant writer position would be a fantastic asset for any artist.
It is, except here's the really weird thing. It's easier to write about other people than it is to write about yourself.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I think I've definitely used a lot of skills that I got from that job.
Sure.
Just like organizational and writing skills, but at the same time, I almost always really like to defer at least to somebody outside of us at least reading it over and anything or any kind of like press stuff, because it's just you tend to like assume that people know what you've already internalized about yourself.
Sure.
And it's really difficult to get around that.
Well, that relates back to you guys. When you present yourself, how do you present yourself? When people ask you where you're from, what do you say?
Our first record was called We're From Here because we got that question so much. And Chris grew up internationally.
Yeah, where we're from is a little complex. And so usually what we tell people now is that we live in California when we're not on the road. Our drummer lives in Washington, D.C. when we're not on the road. But we try to be on the road as much as we can. And as far as people asking, usually the question you get is where you're from, what do you sound like? And when we tell people what we sound like, we tell them that we have a lot of like folk and classic rock influences, that we play original music, and it's big rock and roll.
Big rock and roll is a good way to describe you guys. Yeah, I like big rock and roll. I'm thinking about the set. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But big rock and roll. Anyways, does where you're from mean anything to you? Do you care about it at all?
Yeah, I think that, like you said, traveling like this isn't for everyone, and I feel like the fact that both of us moved around a lot and have lived in a lot of places makes us a lot more able to slip into that role pretty easily. I was born in Arkansas, and a lot of my family was very musical. My mom plays mountain dulcimer and auto harp and
That's
guitar.
So cool.
And like we sang, like we did like folk performances when I was a kid. Like I sang high harmony kind of stuff. Like we did like Carter Family kind of stuff. Like
so,
that.
Your mom is like probably cool with this. At least the
oh yeah,
the fact that you're
actually
in a band.
All of our parents have been super cool and super supportive.
Yeah, you know when I actually told my parents, it's like, okay, look, I have this like stable job where I actually had the opportunity to like sort of buy into the organization the next time that they go and open a new bar, you know, I could hopefully get like sort of a sweat equity and like helping to like expand the organization. And I was looking at it, it's like, wow, I could do this for the rest of my life. I could get an apartment and a dog, and we could be like, you know, we would basically have like a stable life. So, you know, I told my folks, hey, here I am at, you know, ripe old age of, at the time, I think I was 34 or 35. Anyway, I told them what our plans were, and I was expecting the, like, are you out of your fucking mind? But instead what I got was like, wow, that's really amazing. I say you go for it. And it was followed up with like, and it makes at least as much sense as being an investment banker these days, as far as job security.
Yeah. Now, do either of you have children?
No, we don't. We have a dog now, though, that we got at the end of our last tour, which we played a show in Bisbee, Arizona, and then we drove to Phoenix to see some friends, and then we drove to a hotel that was kind of in the middle of nowhere in Tonopah, Arizona. There's nothing in Tonopah, Arizona.
It's in the middle of the Mojave. The closest thing is a nuclear power plant, and that's where, like, the couple, I think, thousand people that actually live in this town all work is at this nuclear power plant.
And there's one hotel. So yeah. we paid with a credit card over the phone, and we got there at about 10, and there was no one there, and we couldn't get in. And it was, like, it's like, the Phoenix area, so it was, like, so hot. And we were like, what are we going to do? So we're like, well, let's just drink some beers in the parking lot, and we'll figure it out. So Chris went to take...
I went to go take a leak behind the building, and as I'm doing this, I hear barking, and these little, like, pointy ears, like, stick up, and my initial thought is like, oh, holy crap, pack of wild dogs. So I come running back into the van, jump in, pull the door shut, like, no, we gotta go park on the other side, the wild dogs. And then everybody else gets out of the van, goes over and looks, and there's this one dog tied up, and they're like, it's not a pack of dogs, and I don't think she's wild. It's just this one dog here. And so the next morning, we finally did get in. Yeah, we finally managed to rouse the two guys that were...
The hotel was being run by two drunks who were living at the hotel, and they were passed out in a room together.
Because they had been watching a movie or something, and they passed out drinking beer.
The two guys, one was, like, huge and had, like, a beer gut and was, like, older, and the other guy had, like, stringy hair, and he had an eye patch that was made out of, like, wood paneling, like the old, like, 90s Calvin Klein ad wood paneling.
Like, yeah,
that was
like
his
eye patch. Like wood paneling from a trailer home. Like, he had cut it out with, like, a jigsaw or something, and then poked some holes and tied it around his head with a shoestring. And yeah.
So the next morning, I went to Blake. I was like, I'm gonna go look at the dog, and it was this puppy, and she was just on a tether, and she was underweight, and she was really sweet. And all of a sudden, eye patch guy was, like, right behind me, and he's like, "Do you want her? We don't want her." So I was like, oh God, really? So I had to, like, go over and tell Ben and Chris, and I was like, the dog, like, they don't want her. And
we ended up driving to LA, playing the remainder of shows that we had, and we dropped our drummer off at the airport, and then we drove right back to the desert.
It was on your birthday.
And got her. Yeah, it was on September 29th of last year. So this puppy ended up being my birthday present. But she's great. She does really well in the van. We didn't bring her along today because we weren't gonna have enough time to spend with her. So we boarded her at this place up near Frederick. But normally we've got the dog in the van with us the whole time, and it's actually been a morale booster, and it also gives us stuff to do when you know, you show up to a show and you're ready to load in, and it's still 4 hours before sound check. You can go play with the dog, walk around the block,
yeah,
go to a dog park.
You don't drink too much.
What's the dog's name?
Her name is Arrow.
Do you have any should anybody know anything about Arrow? Final thoughts about Arrow?
She's an Australian Kelpie, which we had no idea what that was, except somebody
She's kind of a little shit because she's really smart.
She's really smart.
Yeah.
And she totally has our number. That's the problem.
Yeah.
But we were at a restaurant, and somebody came up and said, oh, you have an Australian Kelpie. And we were like, we don't really know what you're talking about. And then we looked it up, and we were like, oh, that's exactly what she is.
Yeah, if you do, like, an image search for Australian Kelpie, the first picture that comes up, that's what our dog looks like.
If you would like more information about Miss Siobhan and Yuma Ray, go to MissSiobhanYumaRay.com, MissSiobhanYumaRay.com. There is no way you just type that out. There is a link to their website in the show description. So just look at that. That's much easier. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, we are @UbiEstMiaPod. We're on Facebook. Just put UbiEstMia in the little Facebook thing and you'll find us. Once again, we'll be at the Hungry Brain for You, Me, Them, Everybody Live on Thursday, May 26th. Please come to that. Both of our songs were done by Daniel Knox, and our art is by Dimitri Samarov. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful night.